This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Sent wide, but the Ivorian cuts back in now. Even further, what a goal! Aston Villa take the lead. Just over 3 minutes to go here at Villa Park as Sam Johnston goes long. Cotter chasing this one, and Cotter score it! Baker playing it forward. Here's Bakuna. Gets it back here to Cotter, who's away here. Cotter!
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
We got off to a great start, had a horrible middle part, and now we're recovering again. So I hope I can just keep it on an equal and not have big troughs of ups and downs.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. While it seems the playoff miracle is over after an away draw against Burton, that's still not going to stop us having the second coming on the show. Welcome, Dan Rogers of the Villa Underground. How are you, sir?
Well, the playoff dream might be over, but there's a steaming hot ball of fire in the sky that we've been enjoying at the weekend, so it's not all bad.
Are you talking about the wonderful Birmingham weather?
Well, yeah, we've got more, you know, more canals than Venice and other things.
I actually ended up going to the cinema a couple of times on Sunday, so not the wisest move.
But, I was going to say the nicest weekend of the year. And you're actually wisely locking yourself away from the football results.
Yeah, well, I made some new friends, so it's all good. So all's good on your front then. I think it's the end of midweek football for Villa for the rest of the season, so you don't have to do that balancing act with your young one.
Juggling small children and the Tuesday night fixture. Now I won't miss that, because what it denies me is those 4 minutes of sleep I do get between Saturday and Saturday. So thanks, Villa. We can look forward to it all over again next season.
You can hibernate over the summer now. Mm. I just got back from Berlin, where I went to see it's a football film festival out there that's been going about over a decade now. I keep meaning to go there. I used to go to Berlin every year for the main film festival in the middle of winter, February, where it was Berlin in the winter. It's
freezing.
Somewhere where you don't want to be living at that time. But I had a kind of a long weekend there. The sun was out every day. People were walking around with beers in their hand. It was almost, and there's no better place in terms of people being free, happy, and enjoying themselves.
But you went to the Olympiastadion, didn't you?
Indeed, I did. You can do everything in there. You can drink, you can smoke. At half time, you just leave your seat, go out, and there's a big park, and there's a few people smoking weed out there as well. So it was.
So it's just like behind the North Stand, then.
But apart from grass instead of concrete.
We've got it so wrong, haven't we, in Britain? With the football match day experience, it says, no, 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 you must not have fun.
It's embarrassing, and I mean, the example of. That was the hotel at Norwich, which is right next to the stadium, which if your room's on one side, you actually get a view of the pitch. And because if you're in view of a pitch, you're not allowed to drink. You're not allowed to actually drink if you're in that if you're in your own hotel room looking at the game. This country's gone insane in so many ways. But
I mean, have we got to the stage where a grown adult can't go to a stadium and have a beer? You know, and the point is, I think what must any European fan think when they arrive in an English football stadium? You know, here's your Capri Sun for £4. It's just bonkers. I don't get it.
And you're not allowed to have a top on your Coke, sir.
I mean, who was the last person to seriously be killed with a bottle of Fanta? Google that now.
The main weapon of choice for the old bottle is to piss in it and throw it, and normally you take the top off anyway. So not that I've ever done that. So
I mean, a real soft drink terrorist would take ample bottle lids with them. Smuggled into the ground. That's a good idea.
God, why didn't I think of that?
Well, I have.
Start collecting Coke top bottles just to have a couple in my pocket when I go in.
I may start smuggling them in as contraband and distributing them in the lower hold. Yes. Like, psst, psst.
Stand round where the service hatch is, just stand round the corner selling Coca-Cola bottle tops.
Hey, you got lids? Yeah, I got lids. Fucking ridiculous. I mean, we're two grown men. We can't have a lid on our Coke. Yeah, in the Olympia Stadium, you can sit down, fill yourself to the brim with sausages, pour beer mercilessly. I mean, there's a guy who wanders up to your chair, isn't it? You're saying that?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, beer boy just comes up.
Isn't that how it should be? I
ran out of spare change, so my only disappointment of the whole trip to the Olympia Stadion, the beer boy didn't take cards, and that's my only downside.
First world problems, isn't it?
First world problems. But no, then the next day I went to see Tennis Borussia Berlin, who are now in the, what is, non-league, it's like the fifth division, and they were playing a game against, I've got the ticket somewhere, Lichtenberg. And their, I was going to say stadium, that would be a bit of a grandiose word for it. Their cabbage patch was it's right next to the old Stasi HQ, which kind of overlooks the Koppen there, which apparently the head of the Stasi, his office overlooked the pitch. So talk about having a exec box with a bit of evil attached to it.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's move on into news that we try to relate to Villa. Yeah, while I was in Berlin, apparently Britain is going to war with Spain over Gibraltar. I mean, what happens in that situation to all, like, for example, Spanish players in playing for English football teams? I mean, would we have to execute Carlos Gil? I mean, what's the situation?
He needs to declare which side of the rock he's on, frankly. And frankly, that's our rock and they're our monkeys, Carlos. You can't have them.
It's a
non-story.
I think it's Michael Howard. Obviously, got a little bit excited, but the press will pour petrol on it until people get bored of the story. But it's when you're going into negotiations to try to get a decent trade deal with 26 other countries, you don't really want to take the piss like that too much. Going into the second thing, I noticed Paul Weller, the mod father himself, ex of the Jam Style Council, is having, at the age of 58, an eighth child. Do you think you get to eight kids?
He must be in contact with Gabby, presumably, for tips and advice. I don't know what... I mean, is his record at risk? I don't know. We need to consult.
I don't know. Is Gabby into double figures? Probably unofficially he is. I don't know. Well, how does that relate to Villa? I think I would say eight is probably the number of first-teamers that we're probably happy with for next season, and we probably need about three more, don't you think?
Who are the three you'd swap out? Let's play that game.
Well, we'll probably discuss them in more detail when we discuss the last couple of games since the last podcast. But we definitely need a proper winger on the left-hand side. I don't think Green's a starter at the moment. I mean, he potentially could play him, but
the position's up for grabs, isn't it?
Yeah, the idea of playing, and it's what McLeish used to do. He played like four to six fullbacks in one game. Playing like Hutton and Bree, and if you're playing Hutton and Bree and then playing Taylor and Amavi, you're losing so much going forward.
Well, Amavi's sort of been shoehorned in there, hasn't he? Because he was so bad at left back.
And he actually was not. It was shocking.
Yeah, that's our £25 million player, don't you know?
Number three, Tony Adams becoming a La Liga manager with relegation threat in Granada.
I'm very much an interim coach here, okay? I've got seven games to keep this club in La Liga, which we all want to do. This is why I'm here. I'm going to kick some players' ass, guys. I'm going to work them hard. I'm going to try my best that I can do with my 40 years of experience in football to try and get this good, to keep the ball out of one end and stick it in the other.
Now, this is linked in to Villa because one of the early ownership packages had him linked as a potential manager of Aston Villa, which certainly turned me grey when I heard about it.
Yeah, Granada do know who Tony Adams is, don't they? They do know. They haven't just found him wandering around the Costa del wherever. Tony.
Well, it's a weird one because, I mean, let's have a look at his managerial track record. He hasn't lasted over a season. Mm. Wickham Wanderers, he left. This is going back a few years, isn't it? It's like, what is it?
Almost 15
13 years. Portsmouth, he was sacked almost instantly. Then he ended up in Azerbaijan with Gabala.
We've all been on one of those long weekends with the lads, though, haven't we? You go, hey, let's just book those easy jet tickets. What could go wrong? Mom, I'm in Gabala.
And Granada, you know, used to be owned by the, is it the Pozzo?
Oh, the Watford guy.
Yeah, the guy who owns Watford and Udinese. And even though they've had a few, let's say, alleged tax issues, they've made a good fist. They've made Watford a kind of a top 10 outfit, FA Cup semi-final last season.
They're quite ruthless as well. I mean, they did that clever thing with the loans to Watford from Udinese, didn't they? But they've got no qualms over sacking a manager either.
Well, they kind of traded their players amongst the three teams. I mean, obviously, before they sold Granada. And, you know, they made big on Alexis Sanchez. It was Udinese that kind of brought him to, apart from his international career, but Udinese that got him over in Europe in the first place. So how the hell's Tony Adams even managing still? He's kind of in with the Chinese, isn't he? The Chinese businessman who have bought yet another club in Europe. I still don't know his role. He worked for him as a sporting director for a Chinese Super League club, and now has a role of a vice president.
Has he announced that this team is going to be Champions League winners within three seasons yet? This guy, is he sitting tight? He's got, oh, damn it, Dr. X has beaten me to it.
Yeah, Dr. X has got the trademark on one of the biggest three clubs and also Champions League in 5 years. Biggest clubs in the world, sorry. But no, it's an odd one. I mean, Tony Adams doesn't come across as the brightest spark and has never been managerial material. And if he ended up Villa's manager, then that would have just ended one way and that would have been pretty badly.
I mean, could you imagine what would have happened? It wouldn't have been pretty, would it?
No, this is the guy. I mean, as well as his drinking issues. I mean, he turned up in Lincoln once when I was a teenager. He went to Rich's nightclub and he would pay for any drink with a £50 note and he would just say, keep the change. He just went in as like a big...
Financially prudent then.
Playing, you know, Jack the Lad, big time Billy, paying for every drink with £50 notes, and was a bit of a knob, to be honest. And...
Allegedly.
He's not managerial material. He's somebody who probably thinks he's more intelligent than he is, and there's a lot of those type of folk around.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony. April 2nd. Go on, Tony. Get my bloody seat cleaned. Sat in dry pigeon shite for the last four games. Barry... Then that's maybe some golden fortune pigeons. I would rather keep it as well, winning. April 2nd. It's Tomb Sweeping Day, a festival in China to show respect for the past people. Also days enjoying new hope of the spring. Climb the Great Wall. April 2nd. As Chinese government doesn't allow exchange foreign currency to buy football clubs, difficult to get any buyers now. We're lucky done last year. Can't sell the bugger now though. April 3rd. Have to make it clear the reason I had to protect was the kind of words made more difficulty for signing good players. Otherwise, who cares what's said? Go again.
Let's move on to Villa matters. Well, I was hoping that Villa were going to win, obviously, against Burton, and that would have carried on the miracle theme, which I think was kind of keeping the interest going in this season. This 100-1 to 66-1 to 50-1, and then it kind of all crashed and burned, basically, because Codger went off injured.
Yeah.
No Codger, no party.
No, and we... The thing about the Burton game was, I think everyone thought we would just steamroll through, and especially after 5 minutes, we thought that was going to be the case. But we...
They're pretty decent.
At home as well, they're quite good, and we... It was so similar to a number of games where recently we've been quite fortunate, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly. And
particularly the QPR one.
It's, I mean, I have this analogy where Villa haven't got out of second gear all season. I mean, they've won games, but they've played the same as some of the games they've lost and drawn. There hasn't really been that much difference. They've clicked into third, fourth gear, maybe. I mean, the last 10 minutes against Newcastle, they probably got up to fourth gear there, where they, you know, forced three or four corners on the trot and, you know, really assaulted Newcastle. But, I mean, the rest of the game, they're in first gear, well, reverse most of the time.
Yeah, we seem to get ahead, and then that's more than adequate, and we batten down the hatches and then go, well, that'll do, and we'll see how this pans out. Whereas I think if we've got aspirations to go up next season, we've got to be not stopping at one, really, and having a real ruthless, merciless streak to us, and also we've got to break this dependence on Codger being the only one who scores goals.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost a perfect example, the Burton game. I mean, that was a game where we needed, it was going to be a difficult test. I mean, anybody they've played recently, I mean, they beat Huddersfield.
Yeah.
They only got beat by Newcastle 1-0. I think they won like three out of the last five home games. Mm. So they're like super well organised.
They don't win a lot of games, but they haven't lost many either, have they, Burton? That's been their position, sort of masks that they're quite an organised unit looking to survive in the division.
Yeah, which it looks like they will do. Mm. But Villa needed to step up a gear to third, let's say, and that was the only way they were going to win. And when Codger went off, you just thought, well, I don't think there's enough there for there's enough firepower left. I mean, it's not really saying, I'm not saying anything about Hogan, because we don't really know if he's going to work or not, or if he needs the team to play a different way. But yeah, no, you know, while the Burton result wasn't bad in isolation, because it's a kind of a tricky place to go, if we wanted to pull off a miracle, we really had to beat them. I mean, you just look at the league table now. I mean, we also needed really Newcastle to beat Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough, and then we'd have been 7 points off with five games to go. You know, it's actually in the realms of possibility. But instead of 7 points off sixth place, that would have been Fulham. We are now 11 off Sheffield Wednesday, and there's no way that's going to happen.
No.
But still, we're still unbeaten in nine. That's still
a positive. Must keep the positive. We're in a lot better. We are in a lot better shape than we were.
The season's over, so we might as well stay reasonably positive. But I mean, let's look at the seven wins in eight that preceded the draw. God knows how this has happened, but we've managed to win seven of our last eight games and keep seven clean sheets in those seven wins.
It's
unbelievable.
Staggering. The clean sheets, that is staggering, because we were just the professional conceders of goals, weren't we? It was, man, look at that run before. It just goes from red to green. It's unbelievable.
So what do you think of, in terms of the defence, what has been the difference?
I think, though Jedinak on paper is sort of, I mean, he's played a couple of games at centre-half, that, you know, while Baker was injured. I thought we saw against QPR, he's actually the, as we become maybe more fatigued, he becomes the third centre-half, doesn't he?
Exactly. He's almost playing like a old-school sweeper, but just, you know, slightly forward a little bit.
Yeah. I think a lot's to be linked to Jedinak, and I think the fact that Codger just cannot stop scoring goals.
Yeah, but that's got nothing to do with the clean sheets.
No.
Stick to the question. But yes, I mean, we could do a 2-minute podcast. Defence is good, Codger can't stop scoring goals, goodbye.
See you next week.
Yeah, I think Jedinak playing in a, let's say, super defensive-minded role, and he is kind of a sweeper, if not a bit more advanced. Maybe when Bruce is talking about centre-back, if we get to the Premier League, I don't see that, but because I think there's just niftier and faster players there that will find him out. But as a old-school sweeper, I mean, what happened to the concept of the sweeper? It just died. It used to be in the 90s. It was all kind of in vogue.
It was a very popular thing, and I mean, I'm
Berezy.
Yeah, actually, that's very true when you think back to the Serie A, and you know, it was when it was good. I was sad enough to watch some of the Eddie Nack's international, and he plays a very similar and has played a very similar role for Australia, where you know they show you the pre-match sort of formation, and actually a lot of the time that's not where the players are playing, and he doesn't play this. He's not a left or right midfielder or even a central. He's so deep.
Yeah.
He's just hoovering up all that in between stuff, and I think that's what the benefit for us has been, that he's given Chester some protection, and it leaves Baker to do the other clearing up bit, really, and not have to worry about the more technical bits.
Because if you were to boil down what, let's say, the equation or the recipe to Villa's recent success, it's just well-organised defence and then Codger's scoring at the end.
Definitely.
And when you look at the possession stats, Norwich, I mean, unbelievable to win that game 2-0, and you've got 31% possession and only managed two corners compared to Norwich's 10.
That's proof that, particularly thinking back over some of the managers we've had, I mean, we lurched badly towards total possession football under Lambert without creating anything or doing anything with it.
Yeah.
You know, we take our chances with the possession that we've got, and I think we're quite happy to let the opposition have the ball at times. I do think that's because we give it away a lot, though.
So, for the completists, I think we get 39% possession against QPR, forced five corners to QPR 6. The corner thing is a telling stat in terms of effective possession, because obviously you want more set pieces than the opposition in terms of if you're overrunning them.
Mm.
And, I mean, QPR had one shot on target, and I didn't feel... I just thought a bit, you know, at the end it got a bit nervy because we should have killed them off a long time ago.
Absolutely.
And this is one of the problems. If we're playing this way and you're relying on and Martin O'Neill essentially played this way, tough organised defence, and then you have speed and guile, mainly through wingers, on the counter-attack, and we don't really have a collection of players to really maximise the way we're playing at the moment. Because the idea of playing fullbacks wide and attacking, I mean, we saw it against QPR especially, some of the choices, that final pass, when either Codger or Hogan was in a great position, or, you know, just to essentially tap it in. You know, Hutton was guilty, Amavi, some fucking terrible
It was harder not to find a Villa shirt, to be honest, on a couple of occasions, and that's where we're seeing the impact of two managers over less than 12 months and what's left of the relegation squad, you know. Take Hutton and Amavi. You know, Amavi's, I don't think, been in particularly good form. He's just playing better, having been relieved of that left-back role. Hutton's playing a lot better, I think, for the competition, but he's not, you know, you wouldn't describe his attacking prowess as being his strength, would you? You know,
no,
he carries
exactly.
the ball very well, and he breaks us out well, but, you know, there's not been many good balls into the box for him ever.
Yeah, once he gets to the edge of the opposition's 18-yard box, then suddenly it's almost like...
He gets found out, doesn't he?
He doesn't know what to do. Yeah. I mean, you go back to Villa when we're playing the same way, but we have wingers. I mean, we were attacking with the likes of Ashley Young, Stuart Downing, Mark Albrighton, and that strikes terror. And Gabby was more, let's say, in his prime then as well, especially from a kind of a pace point of view. We definitely, when we're talking about those eight players and we need, let's say, three more, I'm definitely thinking a proper kind of left winger. Because Grealish doesn't seem like he's got it, and he hasn't got that. Grealish comes into play if you've got a midfield that plays possession football, I think. Doesn't look like we're going to go down that route anytime soon.
I don't see where he fits in this at the moment, and it's been, you know, we'll get to him a little bit later on, I suppose. But, you know, we're talking about what seems to be, we're trying to set up for that counter, that quick pacey burst, and we're sort of using the players that we've got at the moment to try and maximise that. Hence why I think Bakuna gets a pick, to be honest, because he's very head-down run sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where Grealishes have probably got to wake up to the fact that they're going to have to come in and use the attributes that they've got, but they need to be more direct, and that's why I think Green's been picking, because he runs that line very well.
You get a lot of discussion in social media from fans going, oh, well, I don't care how we win, it's all about winning. And the thinking is very kind of binary. I mean, articles are either positive or negative. To some people, there's no room for like discussion or asking questions and like mulling over both sides of the equation. But and it seems to extend to there's only two ways to play. You either play ugly and win, or you play like Barcelona and lose, apparently. But what we're talking about in the context of what we're talking about in the last two games is, well, no, let's say the whole season. But against QPR, for example, we're not talking about playing like Barcelona to beat QPR. If they're making that final pass, instead of I think it was Hutton or Bakuna, crossed it in, and there was back four, three forwards were being marked, and there was a spare QPR man, defender. The cross went straight to the guy on his own. So out of three or four options he had to hit three Villa players, it ends up going to the spare QPR man. That's, if he hits a Villa player and he scores on a header, that's not total football. That's just like doing the basics. Right. That's what we're asking for here, because Villa could have, if it was Codger up there with Ashley Young on the side and Stuart Downing or Albrighton on the other side, Codger would have had a hat-trick against QPR, no problem.
That was a similar thing for me. I think it was probably the first half, because Lansbury's was the corner taker against QPR. He put a ball in and it just floated. It was the perfect cross. And not one of our, none of the Villa players in the box reacted. And we've almost got to become more clued up to the fact that you've got to expect Lansbury to play that ball. You know, he's been purchased and bought to play that ball. And more often than not, I'd gauge that unless an opposition defender can read it or get on the end of it, we've got to assume he's going to put the ball on the penalty spot from a corner. You know, that's the kind of thing that when you look at how poor our conversion rate from set pieces is, that you wonder, what are we gambling? Or I think under Bruce we'll improve in these areas, because you only have to look at how we've tightened up defensively. Maybe that's where he's looked first of all.
It is, of course, kind of repetition and drilling it into people's heads, you know, the routines of when we're going forward. But still, there's just needs to be, to quote Alan Hansen, that extra bit of quality in that kind of final ball. And it will.
Where's
it will
he from again?
I don't know. I didn't even try. I withdrew the accent before I opened my mouth.
It was a Brexit accent.
Yeah, Brexit accent. But no, it transformed. Same amount of possession. If they just could, you know, play the final ball properly and, you know, have some winger that isn't a fullback, who just gets to the edge of the 18 and crosses in, actually tries to get behind the defence and stretches them and gives Codger even more room, run in on goal and obviously score more goals. Because at the moment, he had his two chances in the first 4 minutes, scored one, and then, you know, that was it from him, really, because nobody else was really creating.
I was about to say, I wonder whether this is a confidence thing, because you just described how we don't seem to get behind teams and stretch them, and it's almost like we're relearning how to beat football teams. You know, when was the last time we've been on a run in recent memory? And for a number of those players, they've been at a football club that the default expectation is that more often than not we'll lose.
Yeah.
And it's been a real, we almost seem to burst and break on an opposition at the moment and not be absolutely 100% confident in what we're doing. And I can see the change.
There's obviously more confidence in defence, but it's still a bit tentative going forward and kind of lacking ideas. And sometimes the idea is the simplest thing and they don't actually take it. I mean, people will say, well, why are you worried? Because 7 wins out of 8, you know, it's all going good. But we're looking at the future here. And if we're looking at this, if we're in the Championship next season, playing this way, I mean, against QPR, we're just one mistake away from conceding an equaliser when we should have blown them away. I mean, watching them at Villa Park, I understood how Newcastle beat them 6-0 at Loftus Road.
I was just about to say that. I thought they were one of the poorest, certainly in the first half, one of the poorest teams we've had at Villa Park. I thought they were quite disinterested, and that was the frustrating thing, that we sort of arrived at 70 minutes under some pressure, most of which our own doing, I think.
Yeah.
But almost we withdrew into ourselves, and that's a nasty habit we've still got, where we almost, it's that expectation that something's going to go wrong, we go deeper and deeper and deeper. And QPR had no right, you know, they weren't being particularly expansive or clever in what they were doing.
I mean, I was surprised when I actually saw the possession stats at the end, and we had only 39% against them, because I thought, well, we're easily going to, at least, let's say, high 40s, because obviously QPR had a bit more of the ball second half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fear is we've a lot of the teams we've beaten this season are the bottom six kind of teams, recently the most notable wins, you've got to probably say Sheffield Wednesday, who had about three or four players injured at the time, and Norwich were missing their main Wes Houlihan in terms of their creative force. We beat Derby, who hadn't won in 5, and we'll see what happens when we play Reading, Brighton. Although Brighton, hopefully, they'll have their promotion already sorted out, and, you know, maybe even the league title if Newcastle start to float. So, yeah, so at the moment, the recipe is a well-marshalled defence and Codger's finishing. But I think Codger would score more if we sort out what we've just spoken about. And it's not about playing tiki-taka. It's just about improving a cutting edge going forward, essentially. And that's not going to be that hard to do, I would venture.
No, I think we've already discussed really. I can think of, yeah, it's a little bit of luck. You know, the one that comes off the post goes in on another day, you know, and then 2 minutes later he's smashing in the second goal. Yeah. And in the second half, it's that little bit of quality and composure that maybe with, you know, everyone's sort of getting a bit excited about Hutton's resurgence of form. But the reality is,
he shouldn't be in the team, full stop. We should.
The reality is a better player finds Hogan. And yeah, that's it's no more complicated than that. That's not saying that Hutton doesn't try hard and hasn't given a lot the last few weeks, because he certainly has.
Yeah, but it's good to see fans getting sentimental about players that have been bang average. And I mean, I'm quite kind of hardcore down the line. If they're not good enough, they shouldn't be playing. And there's a reason that's we're where we are, and that's because we had players like Westwood and Bakuna and Hutton. And I don't think if we want it promotion, and if we want to get back to being a top rate Premier League team, it's you know, the time is not to turn all revisionist on players that have got us into, you know, poor positions in the first place. No, so that's where I stand anyway.
I don't disagree with that in principle. I wouldn't say I'll write off players from you know, being around better players, they may improve. But I think of the core remaining group at the club, and I'm just thinking desperately off the top of my head, are there, you know, we've seen enough of them now. I don't see Hutton as the future. I don't think Bakuna's nearly got as much quality as what we need, and he's at best a championship squad player in my view.
Yeah.
Gabby, that doesn't represent the future of the club, and I think, you know, that we've discussed him to death, so we don't need to go there. And your Grealishes have probably got a big question mark against them, because if they're not performing here and now at this level, or they're not in Bruce's plans, then where do they fit at Aston Villa? Because,
well, yeah, I mean, as we mentioned, since we're not playing a possession-based football, which would suit him more than the way we're currently playing, where's he going to go? I mean, if we're talking left side, we need somebody fast and direct if we're going to play in this kind of counter-attacking setup. And is Bruce going to, you know, obviously spending money on Hogan, going to drop Hogan and have Grealish playing in the hole behind Codger? I don't see it.
Just looking at...
I don't think Bruce is a big Grealish man. I think he was trying to get rid of him in January,
well,
to be honest.
He's been sat on the bench for the last two games. I mean, we haven't even seen him for... He's not made a resurgent impact, has he? And I mean, just jumping away from Grealish for a second, you look at the type of player who's actually doing quite well under Bruce. They're the more uncomplicated. They've got a clear role in the team, haven't they? And I'm not sure what Grealish's role is, whereas if you were to look at even a Baker or a Neil Taylor,
yeah,
they're unspectacular.
I thought Taylor, especially the kind of first half, he had a decent, just keeping it simple and doing his job description, he was fine.
I wonder whether that's the Bruce mantra, because I don't want to oversimplify what he's doing, because I think he inherited a lot of problems at Villa and there's still stuff to resolve. But, you know, Codger scored the goals. The two midfielders, you know, it's a combination of Lansbury or Hourihan, try and create them. You know, complemented by Adoma and another wide player, be it Amavi at the moment. You know, like you just mentioned, Taylor. Taylor's been unspectacular, but actually really consistent. Really consistent since he's arrived. So,
yeah, I think Grealish has got a problem if he's not preferred on the left-hand side to Amavi, because Amavi was pretty poor. I mean, the thing in the whole 10 against QPR, it actually, the crowd... It's a bit of a difference, actually, from, let's go back 2 months. The crowd started off pretty positive, saying, unlucky son, you know, oh, totally with the players. But then they kind of turned a little bit on Lansbury and Amavi just for some kind of sloppy play and, you know, poor decisions when they were passing. But Amavi took the brunt of that, and people were actually, you know, cheering when he went off.
Amavi's a funny one. People look for scapegoats and...
Well, yeah, it's like a default reaction. But there's no way that we were offered 25 million for him. I mean, if somebody offered 25 million, that tweet was bullshit.
Not a prayer. Like everyone, I want to see this Jordan Amavi become this world-class French footballer that I suppose we all imagined he would. I'm not. He had a horrendous injury, which is, I think, is part of this. But he is, I've seen nothing to suggest either before his injury, and this is a key thing, it's about being revisionist again. He wasn't doing very well at left back in the defensive role before he got injured.
No.
But I do see a footballer in him, but his role's not clear for me. His passing is, he looks so nervy on the ball, and he's more willing just to kick the ball wherever than engage his brain, and that's a worry for me.
I would like to see him personally go down the byline and try to get behind them, and then cutting it back for, you know, players like Codger running onto it. And you know,
he had that
Hogan
great chance in the second half where the ball broke. And is it just me? Do you have to be a professional footballer to realise that where there are three or Mark Villa players on the edge of the box, that maybe skying it over the bar from an acute angle isn't the cleverest thing? You know, what's that about? Perhaps we'll never understand footballers.
Well, I don't understand if they're getting paid five figures a week and they can't pass the ball. I mean, that's my biggest issue.
We've had a graveyard of those players.
Yeah, that's my biggest issue with modern day.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Football.
G'day Villa fans, welcome back to Jednak's Jangle. I've eaten canaries for breakfast, batted my way past Park Rangers, I've even fought bloody Iran in the last week. Nothing in this world can stop me now. Not Gabby, not Tonev, not even a bloody Neil Taylor tackle. But the Villa pride is rather late for the big migration north. And Jesus, Bruce is desperate to lead us to the feeding ground. But a predator strikes when you least suspect it. And we have the element of surprise on our side. Jesus Christ, have you seen our Huddens playing? Pray to the God of Beards for us, will ya?
Let's go back to what the Burton game spelt to our season. What you're seeing a lot on social media now is a lot of people coming out the woodwork saying, oh, we said it was going to take two seasons to get back up. How did you feel at the start of this season? Once we dropped about $55 million in the summer, did you think, oh, playoffs it should be at least?
I suppose I did. I mean, I recognised that we had a major overhaul to do, but I thought that we threw a lot of money and a lot of intent at it. I'm not going to say that some of that intent wasn't misguided and there weren't mistakes there. You know, you can circle players like Gallini, Tishbola. I mean, you might not have predicted McCormack, but you might have. I think most people would say, hang on, that's a lot of money for a guy pushing the wrong side of 30.
Yeah, I mean, there was enough reasons there not to buy him, put it that way.
And I think that's a sign that I'm not critical of the owner's intent. You know, there's a lot of money being put up there. But I think the way that he went about it was naive. And that meant that our season didn't really start till Bruce got here, really, because he employed, for whatever reason, he employed Di Matteo, be it the fact that he had a Masters or that he'd won the Champions League. It was clear very quickly that he'd let him loose with the checkbook, and we didn't look like we had any momentum towards even the playoffs, did we?
Or even a plan in place to do it. I mean, it's not impossible. Let's put it this way. As we've mentioned before, Sunderland were relegated on 15 points with a worse setup than Villa, and they won the championship the next season. So they managed to get their act together within a summer. So it's not out of the realms. And as Bruce said, one of the interviews he did shortly after he took over in October, he said, when you get offered a job in October, you know it's because a club is in trouble. There's only one way for this club to go, and that is up. If I don't think I couldn't get promoted, I wouldn't be here. And he's talking about this season. There's no honeymoon period. We've got 35 games to go. That's a lot of time to do something. When I came to Birmingham City, in 2001, we were 15th at Christmas and still got up via the playoffs. Now, and other things he's also said suggest that he was pretty bullish that he would get in the playoffs, because January 1st, we were 6 points off the playoffs. with that amount of money, that squad he had at his disposal already, and I think he admitted in the press that it was one of the best squads he's taken over,
mm-hmm.
I think he'll be disappointed not to be at least the playoffs. I mean, we're talking about the playoffs as if it's like some difficult thing to get to, but it's like the top six in the bloody championship, for God's sake. It's not as it's not like the Champions League.
I think if there's one thing that really hamstrung Bruce was the fact that I think the club really underestimated, or again, maybe I'll use the word naive again, we're naive going into January without any suitable replacement for Codger. And this was something I brought up after the Burton game, and a couple of people said, well, hang on a minute, we went and bought Hogan. Well, we did, a month too late, probably.
Yeah, that was right at the end of the window.
If we wanted him, and this, it's easy as a fan to sit back and say, hang on a minute, we should just wander in there with a checkbook on day one of the transfer window and do our business. Well, to be honest, on the last day of the transfer window, I think we did, we got help. You know, we paid a lot of money for Hogan. I'm not saying there wouldn't have been other, I mean, West Ham were clearly sniffing around him as well, and he probably weighing up his options. But we let, you know, as you said, from the 1st of January, we're 6 points off promotion to actually that terrible run ran well into February.
Yeah.
To the point where we were discussing relegation, you know.
I mean, I remember writing a piece early doors, I think it was August, about essentially sounding the alarm bells about the African Cup of Nations. And I mean, potentially we could have lost three players with Albert Adoma, but he didn't go. But at the time, we're losing what we thought to be our two main attacking threats in AU and Codger. And, you know, that kind of thinking got a bit of momentum, and it got to Dr. Tony on Twitter, and Dr. Tony was addressing January. He said, oh, we'll get some loans in, it'll be covered. And you've got Steve Bruce saying, oh, we've got six strikers at the moment, that's too many, you know, somebody's going to leave. We come into January, and suddenly we're playing Gabby Abongahor, who's, we've been told he's on a six-week super fitness regime, and this is actually, he's starting, and it's only the second week of that 6 week supposed fit plan or whatever it was to get him back into shape.
Major clanger, and it conspired against Bruce, because he probably found himself in a position where he had to play Gabby, and perhaps that's something that he wouldn't want to admit publicly with, you know, at the time.
The McCormack situation.
We had the McCormack situation that was dealt with publicly. There was the protracted Hepburn Murphy contract thing, which, you know, was unsavoury.
But considering Hepburn Murphy's not really a starter, it's not really...
Well, no, but he would have... This is the thing about Hepburn Murphy. At that moment in time, if McCormack was off the table and with the players away, he'd have probably got a run in the team for 3 or 4 weeks with the other injuries and whatnot.
Yeah, and we also got to factor in selling Rudy Gestede so early in the winter as well.
Doesn't look a bad bit of business in retrospect, though, does it?
Well, I'm not talking about his ability, but just the fact that we suddenly we got rid of him.
No replacement.
No replacement. Obviously, they knew that McCormack was having issues at that time, surely.
They must have done.
You know, suddenly their pants were down, no firepower, and it's cost us the playoffs. Because Bruce, when he took the job, expected the playoffs, and it's not this, oh, it's going to take two seasons to go up. And we're not talking about actually promotion here. We're just talking about reaching the playoffs. I mean, we might, you know, we're not saying we'd get through the playoffs, but he expected it. And that, to go into the year, January the 1st, 6 points away from the playoffs, and then suddenly you find yourself 25 points off the playoffs, there's some real issues there.
Well, that shows you the depth of the trough, though, doesn't it? That we went from being... You know, we had that sort of mini resurgence at the beginning of Bruce's tenure to really, really badly losing our way, to the extent, you know, we had so many players come through the door, and I can think of games like the Forest game, the Leeds away game. We talked about early in the season lacking a plan. I think Bruce really struggled to gel together the new players and form any sort of identity for probably 6 weeks.
Yeah. And the fact that he won 7 out of 8 and that the nearest it got us was about 9 points, 11 points off the playoffs, shows you how bad that run before impacted on, the progress of the team.
I don't want to detract away from the fact that over recent weeks, we've really stuck some fantastic points back on the board. And I have to say, our season would have been pretty grim and dismal in terms of an outlook for next season if we hadn't. But we really... Some of the things that we showed across that losing streak, we need to kick those habits. We need to kick those habits. And there was a little bit of it in the Burton game as well, where I mentioned it already, where when we get ahead or when we get a grip of a game, we've got to be going 2 and 3 goals ahead against teams to give us a buffer. but be the, you know, promoted teams have a ruthless streak.
We're just not offering enough going forward. I mean, we're still not performing, and this is my thing about the performance levels aren't that good. And, you know, as I keep saying, it's not about tiki-taka football and, you know, being pleasing on the eye or any of that bullshit. It's just taking chances, creating chances in whichever way you want to do it. And we're just not doing it. You know, it's about beating teams easier, because while Bruce likes to say, oh, this is the championship, I will say this is the championship, but I mean it's not that good.
Well, look at the QPR game. That was so similar to the Burton game. But QPR were disinterested for that first half, and yet,
yeah,
I mean, it's this thing we've been talking about. Why can't we put together 90 minutes of football? That doesn't mean we're in complete control over those 90 minutes, but have that, you know, we get on the ball, we have got that drive to make the final third. We're not, you know, we've got more than one obvious option to win the game as well, because so many of Codger's goals as well. I mean, the Burton one, you know, he presses the guy. Yeah, it's a dreadful defensive error. He has a lot to do, but it's all him, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's all him.
I mean, while the jury might be out on him being a complete player, there's no doubting he's finishing. And once he gets a sniff of goal, there's only one way he's going, and that's...
Fantastic, yeah. You really can't fault Codgers. You would put your house on him scoring one-on-one, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's been talk of him leaving, which, that's natural. Any player that does anything above average is always linked away. I mean, one scenario is if Lukaku of Everton goes somewhere else, and, you know, he's been kind of showing some consistency as perhaps a top of the pile kind of striker, would Everton like come in for him?
Well, this is going to be the challenge, and it's the one that is the elephant in the room, isn't it? That it's very easy for any owner, not just Aston Villa, to say, you know what, these are our protected players. And I would count Chester in amongst that, because I think a decent Premier League team would be looking at a player like James Chester and perhaps Jonathan Codger and saying, well, hang on a minute, at worst, they're not going to, you know, they're a squad player at Premier League level. You know, I would look at both of them as being, you know, they would slot into and improve most of the struggling Premier League teams that I've seen this season.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think, you know, if we had got promoted this season, you'd have expected those two to start in the Premier League. So
absolutely. They'd be two.
Just goes to show that they would be of interest to another team.
Well, we may have to resist that yet, and that it's something that makes me very, very uncomfortable, and it's something I've mentioned before, that, you know, if we don't get off to a good start and we sort of arrive into January with similar uncertainty. I've said before that I have 1% in my mind, I have this sentimental, these players will be loyal to us, but also we've been football fans long enough to know that money talks and ambition talks, and players, whoever they are, will be off. No matter how much we say that we'll resist bids, it's and that's why we've got to get up, as we've got to get some momentum next season and treat the final games as our pre-season, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, hypothetically, if Everton were interested, the advantage is... Well, the situation is 4-year contract. He's only done one, so Villa will have some be able to ask for a decent transfer fee, and obviously they would push the boat out just to save face with fans if they got, like, you know, 25 million, which I don't think Everton would pay for. But if they got something like that, then fans would be more understanding. But also, if it depends on the player, if the player wants to go, because he'll be 28 next season, so he's kind of at the prime, so, you know, he doesn't want to be playing in the Championship forever.
I mean, the other thing to bear in mind, and it's something that's become increasingly apparent over the last 15, 16 games for Villa this season, is that, you know, I've never really appreciated up close what a gulfing class there is between the Premier League and the Championship. And I don't mean in terms of the quality of goals scored or the players. It's overall quality across the... You know, there's a huge... It's almost like there's a line that's been drawn where good players and quality football teams, there's a clear separation for me. And that's the leap that you look at teams that have got up and have survived. They've actually gone through another transformation stage of improving their squads from, what can I say, a team to drag them out of a 24-team division against, you know, there's some very ropey teams in this league, of which we've been one of them at times, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair enough.
To become a bit more of a football team with a clinical edge.
So if the Burton result is effectively the nail in the coffin of any playoff miracles, what's left in the season for you? Obviously, if you're a season ticket holder, it's a day out now, isn't it? Pretty much, that's about it.
Well, it's pre-season for me, and it has been for a few weeks. I think we've all harboured, you know, clung to this idea that we can drag ourselves into the playoffs. And
do you think Bruce was playing for that? Do you think he kind of believed that? So that's maybe why, let's say, they were looking to secure wins rather than going out to win, if you know what I mean. Like, once they scored, they kind of hung on to it and tried to kind of shepherd it over the line for 3 points rather than playing with a bit more freedom.
Yeah, well, the clean sheets are key in that over the recent period as well. That's a huge positive to take, that we've become a lot more harder to beat and a lot more solid. You know, we still make stupid mistakes, but they're less frequent. I think, you know, what we've got here is the ability to take some momentum into next season, and it's, you know, something that Leicester did in the Premier League, and it's a great opportunity to shake off the old losing and meandering mentality and actually start to get into a rhythm of winning games. The fact is, we're on a good unbeaten run at the moment. You know, you take that.
Yeah, I think they need to take that to the end of the season.
Absolutely.
I would say.
I mean, all
they've got to do is just give the Blues a hammering, and most fans will be happy, and you know they'll be happy on social media, and that will buy everybody concerned more time, apart from the more cynical people like our good selves, who can see the bigger picture.
Well, it may not buy one man much more time. I mean, we could have the prospect of Zola getting unceremoniously sacked, either. Hopefully he makes it to the Derby game, and then we can dispatch him suitably.
Yeah, because Zola works with so many different songs, so it'd be good to get him there, because he's done a good job. I mean, if Villa had sent him to manage Birmingham, they couldn't have sent a better player. Oh, sorry, better manager, sorry. The Gary Rowlett thing, where he'd won more games in, was it 8 days, than Zola had since his time there.
Well, we can have the conversation about infinitely better managers, but I mean, we don't need to devote too much of our podcast to it, but it really does stand as one of the worst, if not bizarre, managerial in-season changes that I can recall. I'm glad you agree.
Yes.
But I can't think
it's one of those where you just knew from the start that it just smelled iffy, especially when, you know, at least half the Blues fans really rated Rowlett, and they understood the limitations of what he had to kind of go with. So why bring in somebody who isn't really known for being like a blue-collar manager who can make the best of what he's got? It just defied all kind of logic.
Well,
you have a popular manager. It's hard to get a popular manager in the first place, and then you get rid of him and bring in a wild card.
Absolutely senseless. I mean, they've given him the ominous public backing this week as well, so watch this space. I think that they could survive by the skin of their teeth, I think, Blues.
I think they're pretty safe. There doesn't seem to be many tails wagging in the bottom three. I think the current three are pretty much going down. Right, Reading next. Reading got absolutely walloped, didn't they?
It's 7.
Against Norwich. Norwich, just a bizarre team. How can you get beat 2-0 by Aston Villa, who played pretty naff, and then you're destroying one of the teams that are actually in the playoffs?
See, if I was Steve Bruce, I'd go, well, that's the championship.
That's the championship, folks.
I think I underline what I said earlier. The quality for me and the consistency in this division, if you can get onto a little run and you can keep your shit together, you're better than the vast, vast majority of teams in this league.
Yeah.
If you're shipping 7 goals against Reading, if you're shipping 7 goals against Norwich, you know, Reading are what, 4th? It's bonkers. And,
well, you just look at the league table. Those two top teams have got like, what, 30 plus goal differences, and nobody's really close to that. I mean, Newcastle, watch them against Villa, not that impressive, but you don't really have to be.
Well, they've worked out that, you know, that they had enough quality in their team, and they've stuck to a consistent game plan across the season. You know, they had a bit of a iffy start, but you know, as soon as Benitez got them rocking and rolling, they haven't really looked back, have they? You know, they always fancy themselves to be in the top two, and they've stuck to that. You look at the playoff teams, and you know, you've got Reading in there, you've got between Fulham and Sheffield Wednesday flirting with it. Three teams there that are, you know, if you'd strip the names away and you'd watch them just against Villa this season, you would never have put them in the playoffs.
No, exactly. It's hard to pick a team that has impressed. And on that note, next season, if that's the season, well, I think it has to be the season. It has to be automatic playoff. I mean, I see some people saying, oh, we need another season to sort this out. No, you bloody well don't.
No,
I mean, under their breaths, the Villa board will not be happy about this season. even though they're tweeting about season ticket sales and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's obviously they're happy about that because it's the finances of the game. But they'll be hurting a little bit this season for not getting promoted straight off the bat, or not even being close. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing, to be honest.
I think they'll have to shoulder some of the blame for the lack of preparation going into January and the decision making around Di Matteo. But I bet they cannot believe that we went from January through to near enough the end of February as we did. And you know, you just add six or nine points into that mix and you're laughing, really, you know, going into the final stretch.
Yeah, if you wrote 11th on the back of a playing card and put it face down and asked Dr. Tony or Keith Wynas, on the other side of this card is where you're going to finish at the end of this season, their expressions on the fan cam
be slightly different.
They wouldn't be punching the air, jumping up and down and high-fiving. I think they would be very surprised. Right, on that note, well, after the next game, we're getting closer to the Blues game. I mean, that's probably the only game left. I was looking forward to Brighton at home, because at the start of the season I thought that would kind of decide something. But you have that possibility of maybe Brighton being crowned champions and presenting them the trophy at Villa Park.
Oof.
That would be a bit of a kind of custard pie in the face.
Yeah, not sure I'd look forward to that, actually, and that's...
Yes, anyway, on that note, lots to look forward to next season.
It's going to be a roller coaster ride. I think particularly August, when we've absolutely got to get off to a good start and Jedinak goes away on holiday for a couple of weeks. Oh, my God.
We need to be promoted by February.
Minimum expectations, laid it. That might be one of Dr. Tony's first tweets of the new season, you know, set the bar low.
Well, promotion by February. Promotion by November.
Chinese.
Well, there'll be a few more shows before the end of the season, so God knows what we're going to talk about, but I'm sure we'll find something. Also, if you use the Twitter, we've set up a Twitter account just for the show. So, because the idea, if you listen to the show and if you want things spoken about, or if there's something you want to bring up that we've spoken about and you have a different opinion or you agree, drop us a tweet on @AstonVillaPod. We've already got our own Twitter account, so the reason why we set this other one up is just for you, @AstonVillaPod. So you can be more a bit more to and fro on the podcast, because it's not like YouTube or whatever where you can drop a comment right under it, because there is no comments, which is a godsend in some respects. But no, use that Twitter, and also tell your friends. You'll have friends out there who are scared of podcasts. They don't know what they are. Also, they think you have to pay or something, but just tell them it's free, it's like radio, and get them on it. And also, don't forget, become a patron, because we're actually about... This is like doing a day's work, putting this out for free. We don't get any money for this bloody podcast, but we have to give up after editing and doing all the funny things and adding it all together. It takes up a day of work for free. So if you can support us by being a patron, do that. Like a dollar, because the website that we use is a dollar thing. Could be a dollar a month, which is, you know, that's not even pocket change. So go to myoldmansaid.com, click on patron, and you'll get more details there. And there's we do a rewards draw as well, just to show our appreciation for your support. We don't just say, oh, it's much appreciated. We actually give you things back. And there's three £20 Aston Villa gift vouchers, and also a book on Ron Saunders that will be given out in the next week or so. So anyway, visit it, sign up, and we'll be much appreciated. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye. Ciao. Auf Wiedersehen. Goodbye, Villa friends.
Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Acast, Player FM, whatever podcast vessel you use to reciprocate. I'm so tired. The reason I've been muting all the time is because I've been yawning.
How far back we were, it does show you how poor a season we'd had prior to the run, because we've slammed some points on the board and it's really made...
Not much difference.
It really hasn't. It really hasn't.
When you consider Bruce at one nowhere. Point. I think Bruce at one point. I think we kicked off a game once, and we were 3 points off the playoff spots. But this is Bruce in charge.
Yeah.
So we must have dropped like a sack of shit to have won 7 out of 8 games, and we've hardly dented. We're still 9 points off the playoffs.
We went full Gianfranco Zola, didn't we, for a few weeks? It was hopeless.
Yeah, that's the point. Hopeless. Actually, we I don't think we've done quite what the Blues have done in their suicide mission.
Well, they're in squeaky bum territory, aren't they now? And they.
Are you looking forward to Burton?
I would be if I had a ticket.
Yeah, well, anybody smart can easily get in the home end, but I'm not going. I can't be asked. Seriously, can't be asked. God, if I didn't have this website, I would pick up the paper to get the results, and that would be it.
The pink paper. Does it even exist, the pink paper anymore?
No, but that would mean I would never know the results. I could be ignorant, blissful ignorance, not knowing of this debacle that's going on.
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.